resorts and casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game day here on Sabres Live. We're gearing up for Montreal and Buffalo Game 5 with full knowledge that the series is going back to Montreal on Saturday. Buffalo in a position coming off of a win to try to continue that and do so at home where, you know, we have talked over and over, Marty, about the challenges for not only the Sabres, but for many home teams so far this spring.
Yeah, and obviously Colorado was able to squeeze one out at home last night after being down 3-0 in the first, almost 4-0. A goal that was scored with the hand didn't count. But anyway, I'm just saying, going back to Buffalo, there's teams that have had success at home. There's teams that have been able to get good starts at home. And this will be very important for the Sabres. I was doing some numbers and looking at, you know, game tapes last night. And Buffalo actually had great starts in three of the four games. Mm-hmm. They scored first in game one. That was the Benson to Doan play. Scored first in game three with Tage Thompson off the end wall. They had an 11-2 shot differential at 1-0 in game four. Like, you're looking at the starts have been good. They've not been able to continue pushing down as much like they did in game one. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to be about to have that start and then just continue to lean on that for the Sabres in game five here against the Canadiens.
What do you think, though, has been the challenge at home based on going back to how the Boston series started and no scoring until into the third period in each of the first two? Ultimately, very challenged in game five. They would lose in overtime in a really tight affair. Certainly most looked at the way they played that entire game and thought the Sabres were really good throughout the course of that game but couldn't break through. And then in this series, after having, as you said, a terrific start in game one, game two, the script was flipped very early in the game and it seemed like they could never recover. So again, this kind of takes you back to a roller coaster type
ride. It's not a lazy river.
It is very up and down.
Yes.
But again, home specific, what can you maybe look at here through the first sixth home game tonight?
So the way that I'm looking at it, Duffer, is a couple of things. Number one, I know Lindy Ruff trusts his team to just say, let's roll the lines, let's get that depth going, right? But I really feel that now, having played four games against the Montreal Canadiens, take advantage of that so-called home ice advantage. Control the matchups. See which opportunities you got. You don't have to go fourth line on fourth line. You don't. And I know maybe that's the normal thing to do. I think you can trust McLeod, Malenstein, and Greenway to maybe have a shift somewhere, maybe against the Evans line, maybe against the Suzuki line, and then find a different spot for Thompson. Maybe you get him out against, you know, Kirby Dach and saying like, hey, maybe that's the advantage you can gain. I really think game five has to become, on home ice, a situation where Lindy Ruff is going to take advantage of some of these advantageous things for the home team. Look, Marty St. Louis, I feel like in the first four games of the Tampa Lightning series, really went just rolling the lines, and then he decided to change the lineups in game five, six, seven, match lines, do a lot more. Because that's when you understand the other team the best. That's when you understand your team the best. I would hope that right now we're going to see some quick changes, some maybe even adjustments in game where you're going to change the lines just to give a different look, to continue that maybe the momentum from a good start. It has to be a good start, but then I want to see some of the coaching that I know Lindy can do, and maybe he didn't have to do it. And he's made some good decisions, going to Luukkonen, bringing in Shen in game four, Helenius in game four. Like, there were some changes, but now I want to see some of the matchups happening in game five.
Not anticipating any lineup changes going into game five tonight for the Sabres. We will talk about what's ahead for the organization beyond tonight, i.e. the watch party here for game six. Kara Murphy from our marketing department will discuss with us just more of the details as we brace for that here at KeyBank Center. It's going to be an awful lot of fun. Anna Dua from Sportsnet is also going to join us at the bottom of the hour. And as always, Shayna Goldman tomorrow tomorrow. And Shayna has already put a little bit of Sabre-related content out on The Athletic, mm-hmm. leading into her appearance tomorrow here on the show. You mentioned some of the changes that we saw last game, and you did mention the fourth line. And I don't think we've talked very much about Ryan McLeod in all of this, other than maybe on Monday when we talked. Was it Monday? The deconstructing of the McLeod line.
Yes, yeah. And trying to see how we go about it.
Right, and so he enters a second straight game where he is expected to be on the fourth line. He didn't see enormous minutes in game four, which no. Buffalo won to even the series, as you would have obviously...
Especially with the special teams.
Well, no, but that's where he got the minutes. See, that's
The rotation got lost in the special teams, right? So the fourth line isn't... You get Greenway on the line on the penalty kill, but you don't get a lot of five-on-five play from that line.
This is where many things can be true.
Yes.
What do you think McLeod's minutes might have been had there been fewer penalties? He ended at 9.5, which is kind of a normal number for fourth line role. Do you really think it would have been that much higher?
I think it would have been 12 to 13.5, 14. Like it was.
He only ended up with 5 minutes at even strength because he played 4:20 on the shorthanded.
3:07 as a line together when all three of them were on the ice. Mm-hmm. I mean that's 3.5 shifts. So you didn't really get to see, like, oh, let's see what McLeod, Malenstein, Greenway can do. There was penalties. There was obviously special teams, power play McLeod, penalty kill Greenway, Malenstein. And then, well, after the power play or the penalty kill, you're going to go with your rotation, their fourth on the list. It really didn't give us the best look at that line. I don't anticipate game five to be as penalized at game four. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that we may see, and we may see that in the first 5 minutes of the game, is, well, coincidental minors, you go for holding, you go for embellishing. Look, I'm done with this. I'm not like going to deal with...
Who do you think is ultimately going to be responsible for how the game is tonight? The officials or the players?
Ultimately, it will be the players.
Okay.
But the players always want to push it. Right? They always are going to test the waters.
At the end of the day, we're all children.
Exactly.
And sometimes we don't listen to those that are trying to guide us, right?
When I was a kid, and it was about the end of May, early June, and the outdoor above-ground pool mm-hmm. was getting to a place where you would check the thermometer, and it would say 72 Fahrenheit.
Not this month.
Well, not this month. That's why I said like late May, early June. But it would say like 70. And I never went in the water if it was below 75. But I still would test
it
out.
Look at that. You and I sharing some more similarities beyond the game.
80 to 85 was the ultimate, right? But I still would like test the water.
Yeah.
Put the toe in. Do I want to go in? I jump in. I said, not again. I think this would be one of those moments where you may jump in a 70-degree water in game five and say, I'm going to continue it because I like it, mm-hmm. or I'm not going to do it. But maybe the referees will have a word in that as well.
To further the McLeod discussion, but not for too long, it's, I think, only significant in the sense that Ryan has been a very key contributor offensively for this team's development over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. We obviously didn't see the full results of it last season because they didn't make the playoffs. But what you're ultimately striving for is to have consistency and expected point totals from players throughout your lineup so you know who to trust and how to trust them in all situations. How challenging do you think this has been for Ryan to have had a drop-off in production over the last third of the season? And yet, while this is happening on a very good team, best in the NHL since December 9th, there was also everything that was going on in Edmonton, his former place of employment, where his name would often pop up based on Edmonton's lack of depth and things that they missed from previous years. There's a lot to look at, I think, within the Ryan McLeod profile heading into this game or any game for
and
Buffalo.
The rise of his wingers, Josh Doan, Zach Benson, and you're in the middle and you're like I don't feel like I'm playing bad, but somehow my production's not there, but both of them are
Zucker and Quinn.
Zucker and Quinn. But like they are steady forces. Mm-hmm. Lindy Ruff keeps us together. But I feel like I'm not personally getting the production, but I'm not playing bad either.
Right.
Right? So, listen, in the playoffs, you do whatever is asked of you to do. You want to play fourth line. You want to play power play number one. You want to play penalty kill number one. Whatever you're being asked. I'm sure if this was a regular season, you know, depending on what happens with some of the prospects, and now we see Helenius in there playing so well, and there's Yuri Kulik that could be a factor moving forward, and Noah Austin. You kind of rearrange what is going on. I think Ryan McLeod is a top three centers. I don't think he's a fourth line center. And maybe he'd be one to be tested on the wing. If it was a regular season, you say, you know what, let's try McLeod on the left wing, maybe with Thompson and Tuck, and see what we got there. And there's injuries and all that stuff that happens during a regular season. I'm not so sure he's worried about that right now. He's playing. I think there's a really good opportunity for him to have an impact with Greenway and Malenstein. We saw that line in game one being one of the best line for the Sabres. Mm. Bring that back. Be a catalyst for your line, your fourth line, to be an impact. Now, I mentioned, you know, matchups. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that McLeod and his defensive abilities and Greenway's defensive abilities and Malenstein's defensive abilities could have an impact maybe against the Suzuki line. You're not going to play that fourth line 15, 16 minutes. But maybe give him a couple shifts, because in the last game, it was Norris, Doan, and Benson that were on mostly against the Suzuki line. The Suzuki line went 16 shot attempts for, 3 against at 5-on-5. I know it was a very heavy shot attempts in favor of the Canadians, especially on the power play. But I don't want to give Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky a 16-3 shot attempts advantage in game 5. So again, there is a regroup, a readjustment of what the matchups are going to look like. And maybe there's a little carrot that's dangled in front of McLeod's line and saying, we'll try you against that line. Be physical. Be tough to play against. That's all we want you to do.
The McLeod line is a trio that all had previous postseason experience coming in. Malenstein's was limited, of course, with Washington, but it existed. And yet this playoff run is still one that now features for the Sabres, with Helenius playing in the last game, 14 players that are appearing in the playoffs for the first time. So again, it's experience on the fly here as the Sabres are home tonight against Montreal in Game 5. This is the first time the Sabres have played on May 14th since the Tops Massacre of 4 years ago. And so it is a very heavy emotional day for our city. We will discuss and honor the lives lost a little bit later on in the show. But I do feel, as we should, all of that today here in town as we look to, you know, sports to be something of a distraction. And tonight, of course, it's emotional because of the Sabres. It's funny how you get to 2-2, right? Like, if it had been 2-1 after game 3 and then the loss happens in game 4, there's a different feeling, right? So they're home now, and the way they finished off game 4, the adversity that they battled through from the penalty killing standpoint, the best part about situations like this is the more you talk about said game, you pick out each individual, right? And I mean, we could have done the whole post-game show on Samuelson if we wanted to, right?
We could have done it on Timmins. And when I got up this morning and I was looking through social media and I got to the rink, and all of a sudden it's like, well, Timmins isn't on the ice. My mind is like, wait. Yeah. No, he's a big part. Mm-hmm. He's a big part of what the Sabres did in game 4. Yeah. Do I want them to defend as much as they were defending in game 4? No, I'd like them to have more of a puck possession and control. But then Lindy Ruff said he's available. It's maintenance day. Totally acceptable.
Exactly.
I mean, Samuelson could have had a maintenance day. You know, there would have been a lot of guys that could. This is, I know when the schedule comes out in the playoffs, I like to be every other day, getting that rhythm. Mm-hmm. But we haven't experienced the playoffs like this year in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I could use an extra day in between games. And I'm not even on the ice. And I'm not, but I could breathe a little bit and maybe have a day of just like, Let's not even think about it, right? But I think for the players, you got to manage that. So for Lindy Ruff to have, you know, a travel day yesterday, mm-hmm. and then today, a full team practice for morning skate, but knowing that some guys may need a little bit more time, mm-hmm. now you got to go tonight, you got to go Saturday, and a potentially a Monday game seven. It's every other day for seven games against the Montreal Canadiens.
And keep in mind, for the watch party on Saturday, it is an 8 o'clock start, yes. as undoubtedly this building will be full for people coming in to watch game
to
six
75
of the series.
And 80 degrees this weekend.
We can dream. It's certainly not that right now. Around it's the not, National no. last night, just the one, and was it finished with an incredible exclamation mark by the Colorado Avalanche. The President's Trophy winners put themselves in a position to wrap it up last night, entering the game with a 3-1 series lead on Minnesota, a team that was built for a long run again, but found themselves in the ultra-tough Central Division. They got the exact start that they were hoping for because Matt Boldy was absolutely dynamic in the first. Johansson opened the scoring. Nick Foligno would score twice after that. Minnesota led 3-0 into the second period. Minnesota led 3-1 into the third period. They no longer held the lead heading to overtime, of course. How do you describe this incredible Avalanche comeback to win the game and the series?
Nathan MacKinnon, I mean, he put the team on his back. I thought he was fantastic. Now, we talked a lot about the scoring from the blue line for the Sabres all season long, and they were second in goals, but the best team points-wise from the blue line defense this season was Colorado. They got a couple of really good shots. Brett Burns, that got deflected by Parker Kelly. And then the Jack Drury goal, another deflection. Like, to get those shots through. We saw Buffalo blocking 27 shots last game. Like, it's not easy to get shots through. And Colorado did absolutely a great job of that. And then that goal by Nathan MacKinnon to make it 3-3 late in the game. I know everybody's talking about reverse VH fail there. I'm telling you, when Nathan MacKinnon shot the puck, it's not like Jesper Wallstedt was reverse VH off the post. He just made an amazing shot. And then in OT, who else but Brett Kulak? The guy had never scored an overtime playoff goal. He had one goal during the regular season, and that was in January 19th. He wasn't even with Colorado. He was playing with Pittsburgh. And he joins the rush. Nate just goes around, finds him wide open net. Colorado makes the comeback. It was so entertaining.
And as you anticipated, that gives them the best odds now to win the Stanley Cup as they move ahead of Carolina once again.
Obviously, you don't know what it was going to happen. Minnesota could have come back. Mm-hmm. I thought if Minnesota won today, well, yesterday, in Game 5, they were going to Game 7. I thought they were going home to win just to come back to Minnesota to Colorado for Game 7. But the best team, despite the fact that Carolina swept both series, is the Colorado Avalanche. They had a little bit of a bump in the road. Scott Wedgwood had a game where he was just, Minnesota won. Well, you know what? Mackenzie Blackwood had an first period yesterday. The shot attempts after the first period was done, when Scott Wedgwood got in the game, mm-hmm. was 70-24 for Colorado.
Yeah.
The first period was 24-19 for Minnesota.
Almost exactly what Buffalo against Montreal was the other night.
Exactly, and what did we see? We saw a team that was, we saw a team that needed to defend and hang on, right? So that's exactly what happened.
Well, as far as what's left here in round number two, it's game five tonight. The Sabres and the Canadiens, with the winner taking on Carolina, who continue to sit and wait. Colorado will do so on the Western Conference side, as Vegas could be the next opponent for Colorado if they wrap their series up in Anaheim tonight. So that is what lays ahead across the Stanley Cup playoffs this evening. And beyond our Game 5 here, we want you to join us on Saturday for the Game 6 Watch Party at KeyBank Center. It's presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. You can expect giveaways, discounted concessions, and an awful lot more. What better way to catch this series, perhaps its conclusion in Buffalo's favor on Saturday night, than watching it here on the big video board? Tickets are just $5. All proceeds benefit the Sabres Foundation. You can go to sabres.com/playoffs to learn more, or you can just listen intently here from Kara Murphy, our VP of Marketing, as far as the details, the hook, the reason to get reeled in for the watch party on Game 6.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Before we talk about the watch party, I just want to know, What was it like to watch Marcus and Nick last night? Like, they scored. They both scored in the series. Nick had a couple of goals. Obviously, Marcus Foligno, Nick Foligno, both your brothers. What was that like watching them? And unfortunately, they lost. But just, you know, I was feeling, like, pride seeing Nick, like, play so well.
No, it was awesome. I have to say, like, it was obviously a heartbreaker, right, at the end of the game and end of the day because they're eliminated. But just what a joy it is to watch them play together, I think, this whole series and this whole playoff. And, you know, they really fed off each other, too, throughout the whole thing. You can see them on the bench having a good time, post-game hugs and wins. And
Living together?
Yeah. Like, no, they're not living together. It was in a hotel.
Okay. They took them out of the house quickly.
but I think it's best for both of them to be a little separated. But they really just loved the whole, you know, situation playing together, and I think it was such a joy as us and the family on the sidelines kind of watching.
That's awesome.
How's the build up for Saturday coming?
Great. So yeah, we're anticipating a really good crowd for the watch party, and you know, doors open, you guys mentioned, at 7 p.m. for the 8 o'clock start, a little later of a game for us for Saturday night, but have some activations in the concourse for families and for fans, and then we'll, you know, sit in the bowl and enjoy the game on the big screen, full, you know, audio on. We'll have the pregame show live at 7:30 for you guys. And then prior to that, we'll have, you know, some fun activations, T-shirt tosses, Lucky Row giveaways, and just ways for really fans to gather and to watch the game together.
So how did the conversation go, like, thinking, okay, we're seeing, like, watch parties in Montreal and in Anaheim and a little bit. And in the first couple games of the series, it was like, well, let's do the Sablehood Bar Network and support our partners and the bars that are part of that. But now we're like, okay, game six is a big game. Like, we need people in the building and we need the players to feel that energy from the fans. So how did the conversation go about deciding when to unleash that?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think it's that ramp up, right? In any kind of playoff series, you always kind of want to elevate your plans as you're kind of moving forward. But also, we saw the great response with Canal Side outside, right? Yeah. When it's a home game night and people are in the seats and ticket holders are purchasing. And we know that people can't obviously all be in this arena and they want to be. So what a great way to open it up for those that maybe can't attend or we don't have a ticket for the whole, you know, Buffalo community to come on a home game night. So, you know, we had the bar networks, to your point. Yeah. We had, it was great to see just different bars and restaurants. And the ways that they were bringing in volume and people into their institutions and establishments. And it was like, this is great just for the city of Buffalo, right? And so, but we thought, you know, what a great way to now to open our doors for game six. Could be a, you know, a good situation for us and and get the fans in here and for a cheap ticket too, right? To goes that goes to the foundation.
We still haven't experienced the best weather during this playoff run, but that tends to not deter Buffalonians. How would you describe the outdoor activities that we've seen as part of the Sablehood Block Party through the playoffs so far?
It's phenomenal. Like, I have to say, you know, we're putting these events on and it's amazing, right? Because the plaza's filled, and then you kind of walk down a little bit over towards the waterfront, you're like, oh my gosh, Canal Side's filled. And we've had 10,000 plus fans at some of these games as of late. And what a great response. And it's a younger crowd, which has been really great too. You know, we have a little fan survey that goes out at the end of these events, and the audience is primarily 20 to 40 year olds, right? So it's a young group, and we're seeing such a great engagement level. And people want to gather. People want to gather and celebrate together, and we're giving them reasons to do that.
So including in all of this is a social media aspect of the fans wanting to show that they're in the crowd and in the Sablehood Block Party and Saturday night here at the arena. What do you, you know, what do you feel when you see all this social media engagement that comes from some of these events that obviously your team and, you know, the whole Sabre staff is working to put together and seeing so many smiles and interaction on social media?
Yeah, I think, I mean, kudos to, you know, you guys know, like, our team works so hard to cover a lot of this stuff, right? Because there's so many different parts of the game that you want to be. There's the on-ice stuff and there's the ancillary events. And when you put the whole storyline together, it's really amazing to see. And we're picking up national, where things are going viral, right? Yeah. With different fans and the Blade Gang and this dummy that everyone's beating on. And it's all good stuff. But I think part of that, too, is just, you know, we're so happy that, again, that the fans are gathering. They're enjoying these moments. We're giving them reason to celebrate. And at the end of the day, you know, we can only do so much. The guys take care of what's on the ice.
Right.
We take care of the ancillary pieces, and we hope it all comes together.
How's your little one doing with all watching the games and all of that? Staying up, watching the whole
thing? A little bit, yeah. Last night we had, well, especially with the Sabres, for sure, a little easier start times. On the West Coast when the Wild were playing, it was a little bit, you know, after the first period, you had to go to bed. But he's mimicking, you know, the UPL and Lions goalie moves. My son's a little bit of a goalie, so he's loving it.
Kara, thank you so much. Can't wait to see how Saturday night shapes up here at the rink.
Thanks, guys.
And, of course, you can go to sabres.com/playoffs to learn more about that. We have pregame, postgame coverage, every single Sabres postseason game tonight, 6:30. It begins right here on MSG and the Sabres app and across all the Sabres social platforms. So we'll look forward to that. And then postgame reaction as well as soon as this one is done. Anna Dua from Sportsnet is next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game 5 is tonight, but you can get in on the action right now through our Sabres 50-50 raffle presented by Northtown Automotive. You don't have to be in the building tonight. You can buy the tickets now at sabres.com/50-50 as long as you are in New York State, or you can scan the QR code on the screen right here on MSG. We have a guaranteed jackpot of $100,000, and again, all proceeds get redistributed through our community through the Sabres Foundation. Guaranteed $100,000 jackpot. It's the Sabres 50-50 raffle. All right, we promised Anna Dua from Sportsnet, and she is here, and there's really only one question based on the two of you sitting next to
me.
Mustard or ketchup?
Absolutely the biggest this or that we've ever had, but I had to run to the concourse and get this beautiful mustard dispenser because you are the ultimate mustard fan.
I am a big mustard
fan. You've hit like viral status on social media with your chipped ice and mustard.
There was like an article in the paper about it too. That's how you know you made it. You know, like social media is great and all, but like I feel like we've reverted back. Like back in the day, being in the paper was nothing, but being like social media famous was huge. Now being social media famous is nothing, but when there's like articles in like the print press, I'm like, whoa, I've really made it. But I actually didn't think it was gonna blow up as much as it did. I don't have a sweet tooth.
Okay.
I'm like not a sweet person. So I saw there was like a shaved ice dispenser near where I was doing one of my hits for the Blue Jays. And I really wanted shaved ice. It was warm. I was like hot, but I didn't want like any of the flavors they had to offer. I love mustard. I eat it out of the packet. It's really good for you too, for like muscle recovery. Like it's
rehydration.
Right? Yes. It's like really good for you. So I was like, let me throw it on the shaved ice and see how it tastes. Phenomenal. Like I drank the whole thing. Everyone's like, it's rage bait. No, I finished the entire thing. The mustard slushy is so good. And then I went to the Jays game for fun with one of my friends and lathered up my mustard on my hot dog there.
So in Montreal during the playoffs, because the hot dogs are so good, is it straight mustard or you go the full load, like ketchup, relish? Everything.
I feel like this might make it worse, but I also really enjoy mayonnaise on my hot dog.
Yeah, no, I like that.
It's not easily findable. Like people informed me that apparently mayonnaise has to be stored in very proper ways, so you can't have it on the hot dog carts. I don't know. I got like a lot of answers about why mayo wasn't easily accessible, but mustard and mayo is my dream hot dog.
Well, this is you know, if you want to take it, it's loud. You can. Well, I'm sure the people down the street in Delaware North are not going to be happy with me stealing it out of the concourse.
Borrowing.
But borrowing, that's more like it.
That's not my gift to take home back to Toronto.
Yeah, exactly.
We act like a game show, but we don't actually have parting gifts for our guests. So
yes, we are very much a game show, but I'm going to put it down now. So
unbelievable.
Carry on.
So when did this love and fascination, appreciation of mustard happen for you? Is this like a lifelong thing?
Yeah, I feel like it's been a lifelong thing. So if you actually go through my ex account, there's a lot more on there that I don't know if you want to see or you don't want to see. But like my dad always used to tell me, my dad actually like came up with this. My family's convinced he has no taste buds. But when I was a kid, my dad would always say like everything ends up in the same spot. So you might as well just eat it. So he would like do it for healthy foods, right? He would always combine a bunch of healthy things that were good for me. And I'd be like, this tastes horrible. And he'd be like, it's all going to end up in the same spot. So then I started doing that as I grew up. And I tend to combine a lot of things. So I have my condiments on the pizza. I put olives in my mac and cheese. People weren't a big fan of that one either. My favorite sandwich, people have tried to convince me is only a me thing. But I swear when I was a kid, I like read about it in one of my cahiers when I was learning French, and it's like a pickle and peanut butter sandwich.
So
when I go to Montreal, if I do go to Montreal this series, I've only been in Buffalo thus far, I want to go around and ask if this is actually a Quebec thing, because maybe I hallucinated that and I'm trying to come up with a reason why I eat that. But that's like my favorite sandwich of all time. So I've done. Oh, here too, I caused some anger because in your medium meal, I took one of those like chocolate fudge cookies or whatever, and I dipped it in marinara sauce. People didn't like that either.
Oh my, yeah. That is some mixtures. Yeah. And I can tell you, no, pickle and whatever, like
no,
sandwich
stuff.
I'm not a pickle person, so I didn't grow up on it. Yeah. So maybe it's just different. But I mean, we'll talk hockey a little bit, but you also have ties to Buffalo.
Yeah,
so you grew up
in
Ontario, but your parents live in Ellicottville, your dad's American. So what's your go-to food or spots here in Buffalo?
Oh, Bar Bill for sure for wings. Okay. It's to the point where I can't eat wings anywhere else. Like if I'm in Toronto and my friends want to order wings, I'm like, I can't do it. I can only eat the wings from Bar Bill. It's my favorite spot, hands down. And yeah, it's funny because I didn't grow up in Buffalo. My parents only moved to Buffalo a few years ago, but we've been diehard Bills fans my entire life. So I love the Bills. I've been down here because it's so close to Toronto. And now my parents live down here all the time and they just absolutely love it. We have like a landline with a 716 area code. Like my driver's license is a New York State like Buffalo license. So it's actually funny because in Toronto when I go places and I whip out my ID, everyone's like, oh my God, you're from New York? That's so cool. And I'm like, yeah, like Buffalo. Like not New York City. They're like, where is this? And I was like, really, really up north. But if you get to spend time in Western New York, it's just so nice. Like everyone here is great. The sports fans are great. I love being here. I'm so happy that I get to cover this playoff series because it really is a second home for me. But it's just such a special place.
A lot on your plate here these days, aside from mustard, and that would be Blue Jays and everything else, right?
Yeah, so it's so funny. I was talking to my cameraman when I was driving here today, and I was like, there's no two more different environments than May baseball and playoff hockey, and covering both at the same time has just been really fun. But the Blue Jays, this is my first season being a part of their broadcast and getting to see what they did last year and making that World Series run. It was just tremendous, and being around the ballpark and getting to cover that team, it's just been so awesome. So I did their homestand this past weekend. I did a 3-game series against the Angels. Now I'm back here in Buffalo, and then I'll be back doing Jays later. So a lot of bouncing around, but really fun. Just two very fun environments to work in.
And are there Buffalo ties with the Blue Jays?
There.
Obviously, their AAA team is here with the Bisons. But I remember during the COVID season, they played here. I got to see, you know, like Guerreros and those guys, and Bo Bichette, not here anymore in Toronto. But other Bison ties last year, a lot of guys got called up,
they
so
did.
There is that, you know,
and
community
then,
aspect to it too.
Absolutely. And also Ernie Clement, huge Buffalo Sabres fan, he's from Rochester, so he like is stoked about what the Sabres have been doing this postseason. He's a hockey guy too, he played high school hockey when he was in Rochester, so him specifically is kind of like the Buffalo spokesperson on that team. But a lot of call-ups of that team, and it's just amazing to see what they were able to do. I feel like it's kind of similar to the Sabres when you head into the that postseason that the Jays went on last year. A lot of those guys were not in the MLB to start that year off, and they're getting this postseason experience for the first time, end up making it all the way, playing against the Dodgers. They're so close to just bringing it all home, but you could say that for a lot of those guys, they've never made it that far into the postseason with everything the Jays have gone through. So some similar ties in terms of feelings to what the Sabres are kind of doing right now.
Are your career hockey stats on elite prospects complete or incomplete?
They're incomplete.
Out
they're completely incomplete. They never even sourced any of them from our website when I was
Nothing.
There's like literally nothing. I played college hockey for 1 year and then I stopped playing hockey forever. But when I was down there, you have to go to actually our like league site in order to see any of those stats from those years, which is hilarious. But when I was down there, actually Ernie was on the baseball team there too.
Oh really?
So,
okay.
Yeah, so I was playing hockey in Virginia, Ernie was on the baseball team at Virginia, and so there's a lot of different ties leading back to where we are right now.
Okay, so obviously covering this series, there's been a lot of back and forth, especially with the coaches, like Lindy Ruff talking about they go down easy. Marty Saint-Louis and his French answers yesterday is like, what is he talking about? His team also, and that's through his lens. So when you cover a series, is that coach back and forth so much fun for a journalist and whatever to be able to cover, because it fuels the, you know, the games?
Absolutely. I think throughout your time covering the league too, you get to see who some of the characters are. So before I actually moved to Toronto, I did some work down in New Jersey when Lindy was still with the New Jersey Devils. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to now see him in Buffalo. And I remember texting one of my friends in game one of round one and telling her, I was like, oh, it's so weird seeing Lindy back here and like getting to talk to him. And I kind of know what to expect from him from his time in New Jersey. And then Marty St. Louis is just such a character. So it's great to talk to him as well. And then you see some like overlap too. We talked to Zach Benson this morning about meeting Marty St. Louis when he was younger, and that picture that was circulating around the internet. It's just great to see those dynamics come to fruition, because throughout the year I mostly cover the Toronto Maple Leafs, so I'm with them at home, I'm with them on the road, and I get to talk to the other coaches once or twice a year, depending on who they are. But during the playoffs, it's a completely different environment where you're spending extended time with these coaches, and you really get to know their little quirks and personalities, which is fun.
What have you thought of the series to date?
It's been so exciting, and I think everyone thought that it was going to be very exciting coming in and go the distance, just because they're very similar teams, right? You get two fan bases that have been waiting for postseason success for so, so long, and you have two teams filled with young players who haven't really been in this position before. And we mentioned it to kick off this series. This is really a changing of tide in the Atlantic. We're so used to seeing Florida, so used to seeing Tampa, so used to seeing Toronto be in the playoffs, and just Florida and Tampa not being in the second round is so surreal. And seeing that this is who's coming out of the Atlantic is the first time we're getting a taste of what the future is going to look like. And both of those teams, I think, have really shown up and showed out. Game three, when Montreal had the performance they had, I was really interested to see how Buffalo was going to bounce back. And it was it's a tough building to play in. The Bell Center is a really tough building to play in. And game four, the Sabres coming back, hanging in there, killing all those penalties, playing such a defensively sound game. And it's actually sometimes like harder to win games when you're in a close margin to just hold out there to the very end and make sure you come out with a win. And Buffalo being able to do that on the road and even out this series, I think, just showcases that we're going to go the distance, and it's such a good matchup. Hockey fans are probably loving what they're getting to see right now.
Yeah, they're loving what, and in Buffalo, we're loving what we're seeing out of Zach Benson.
Yeah.
You talked about, you know, having a chance to cover him now, and maybe in the regular season you don't get a chance to talk to those players as much. What has surprised you the most? That he just turned 21 years old and he has that already build up rap sheet that everybody hates him, or that his family owned carnivals and then he went from town to town back home in BC in the summertime and did the glazed donuts at night after going to hockey school? Like,
so
those
funny.
Are two different things, but what is something that surprised you the most about him?
I think he's very well spoken whenever he speaks to the media. It sometimes shocks me with some of the younger players in the league how well spoken they are. Mm-hmm. He carries himself very, very well. He handles himself very well. So I talked to him this morning, which is the first time I've actually spoken to him a bit more closely after morning skate, and he answered the questions well, had a good read on the game, and just seemed wise beyond his years. And when I learn all this information, I go on Twitter and see all these things about Zach Benson. It's just hilarious to me. But I remember when he first broke in, and I think there was a lot of talk about the star power that he had, and the way he's playing in this series really showcases that what people saw in him was correct.
Anna Dua from Sportsnet is with us here on Sabres Live. You just mentioned breaking in. Mm-hmm. Give people a little background as far as how you got into this.
Yeah, so I played hockey growing up. That was my thing, and it was just my favorite thing in the whole wide world. And I never really wanted to be a sports reporter. I just played hockey. I coached hockey when I was in high school. Absolutely loved coaching hockey. It was funny, I used to go to high school in the States, actually, and where I went to play hockey in high school was at the Caps practice facility. Mm-hmm. So I used to like coach Ovechkin's godson and got to like hang out around that team all the time. And I was there when they won the Stanley Cup. So much fun. And then I went to university. I was playing hockey there, but I hurt my knee a couple of times within 1 year, senior year of high school, first year of college. And that was just kind of it for me. And it's really nice now, honestly, to see everything that's happening with women's hockey and the PWHL expanding and everything, because I'm really not that old. I'm only 27. But even back then in like 2016, it was a serious thing being like, where is this going to go? Right. So it was just about playing for a couple more years and being done. I just decided I'd be done sooner. And then I was just going to normal class and I didn't really like what I was taking. I was a business undergrad. It wasn't calling to me. So I called up my dad one night and I told him, I'm just like, I'm not feeling feeling, what I'm doing right now. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I don't know what I want to do with my life. And my dad was the one who said, I don't know, you like talk a lot. You played hockey forever. Like, why don't you just become a sports reporter? I was like, okay, that's a pretty good idea. So then I went to, I transferred schools. I went to school back up in Toronto, did sports media, and I graduated during a COVID year. So this might just be inspiration to those who are listening that you can't really predict your path, but somehow you'll end up in the right place. So I graduated during a COVID year, and I ended up moving to New York while I was still in university. And when I was down there, I was working part-time for the NHL and NBC Sports when that was still the rights holder in the States, doing digital stuff. And someone from the league saw the digital stuff I did, and then I got brought into the league, and then I started working at the NHL Network, and then I was there for 3 years, and then someone from Sportsnet saw what I did at the NHL Network and brought me back up to Canada, and full circle, now I get to cover my hometown team that I grew up watching on the channel I grew up watching them. And I never really thought that that's where I was going to end up, especially at 27. But every day I go to work and I'm like, God, this is so crazy.
Now, you have a connection with our Thursday Insider, who we bumped today to yesterday's show because we were going to have you. So Darren
Gregor. I was going to hold that over my head.
Yeah, I know. So any like things that we got to know about Darren, because you're good friends with his daughter.
Yeah.
So like anything we don't know about the guy that's on TV as an insider, but is different as a human being, as a normal person.
Oh, Dregs is just like the best human being on the planet. It's so funny because I think a lot of folks know him as this like big city insider because that's what he's been for so many years. But he's from Saskatchewan. He's from small town Saskatchewan, and he's just the most Saskatchewan person you will ever meet. So whenever I get to hang out at their house, it's just, he's so much fun to be around. He's a great dog dad. They have like this massive Great Dane who they named Tiny, which is hilarious. I remember when they got Tiny actually, and he's just awesome to be around. That entire family is awesome to be around.
Ever seen him in an adult fight? Because he talks about that a lot.
I have never seen that happen. I would love to see that happen, though.
We talk about it a lot. I think Darren tries to distance himself from it now.
I really want to see it. But he actually did give me a piece of advice when I was starting in this field that was really good advice. And he looked at me one day. I remember I was shadowing him for like a school project. And he was like, Anna, do you know why you're going to be successful in this field? And I thought he was going to say something about my talent, you know, or like the fact that I played hockey or anything. And I was like, why? And he goes, because you're a dual citizen. And I was like, you know what? He wasn't wrong. He really wasn't wrong. I can't work anywhere. So that has helped me out.
That works.
Yeah, it does work. Anna, thank you for stopping by today. Enjoy the rest of the series.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to game 5.
Anna Dua from Sportsnet will continue Sabres Live after this in advance of game 5. Series tied at 2. Stay with us.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We have a game-worn jersey auction ongoing from the 25-26 season. You can bid on the black and red jerseys worn by your favorite players. All proceeds benefit the Sabres Foundation. Auction is open until May 17th at 9 p.m., so place your bids now at sabres.com/auction. Big birthdays today, Danny Gare and Rick Vive, former Sabres.
Yeah, I texted Danny Gares. I said, happy birthday tickets. I did not text Rick Vive. But he was my former coach when I was down to the South Carolina Stingrays of the ECHL. Actually, coached Jared Bednar of the Colorado Avalanche as well when he was down there.
Yeah, Rick's career began with incredible fame in Toronto, 3 straight 50-goal seasons. Mm-hmm. Danny Gares, of course, here in Buffalo, legendary Sabres Hall of Famer, 18 in the rafters, 2 50-goal seasons, one of the best that has ever played in the blue and gold. Today is the hardest and darkest of days for our community. I struggle, as many of us do, to put things into words on the 4th anniversary of the massacre on Buffalo's east side at Tops. So I'm going to lean on our friends at Buffalo Fashion Runway and read what they posted today, that on May 14th, 2022, our city changed forever. 10 beautiful lives were taken in an act of hate, and Buffalo continues to carry both the grief and the responsibility of ensuring they are never forgotten. We honor Ruth Whitfield, Margus Morrison, Andre McNeil, Aaron Salter Jr., Geraldine Talley, Celestine Cheney, Roberta Drury, Catherine Massey, Hayward Patterson, Pearl Young. May their memory be a call to action and their legacy a light.
And this obviously is a community here in Western New York and Buffalo that sticks together. And in these playoffs, a lot of people keep asking me, Marty, you live in Buffalo. Why did you decide to stay in Buffalo? And I tell them about all the great things that are in this community, the great people.
And unfortunately, a moment like this one 4 years ago really put a dark cloud on a lot of things that still exist in and around our world. So as a community, as resident and citizen of Western New York, Buffalo, and this area, we got to continue to do better to help one another and support one another, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, or anything, and we can do better.
We certainly can, and we will carry their legacy forward. We'll see you tonight.